I think from our end in the hospital, we really appreciate the value and knowledge that Karen's staff brings to us, because we often don't know these patients and her team has a relationship with them. So they can help deliver information or get us in touch with families or kind of understand what's going on in the psychosocial piece of the care. And so I think that's where there's a really good collaboration and handoff.
Hello everyone, and welcome to Pop Health Podcast. In today's episode, returning co-host Joe Zimmer and I traveled to Arizona, where we sat down with Pam Foster, Vice President over Care Coordination at Honor Health, and Karen Van Esky, Vice President Clinical Operations at Innovation Care Partners. In today's show, these two women discuss their relationship and how Honor Health and a clinical integrated network known as Innovation Care Partners operate together and coordinate excellent patient care. We hope you enjoyed today's show, and if you do, please leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher. And of course, you can always learn more about the show at pophealthpodcast.com. If you'd like to reach out to me, feel free to email me, gavin@pophealthpodcast.com. Thanks, everyone, and enjoy the show. Pam and Karen, can you tell us something about yourselves that might surprise the audience? Maybe something outside of the workplace. And who wants to go first?
Well, I will, Gavin. I'm Karen, and I will tell you a little bit about how fun I have with my 8 children. And we have 8 grandchildren, too, now. So we are a very family-focused. We love the kids and the grandkids, and it really keeps us very busy. We have 2 more grandkids on the way, so soon to have 11 grandkids. Woo! All those babies.
Very good.
Yeah.
And remind me, you're based here in Arizona. Where's your family?
They're everywhere, actually. We only have 1 child here. We have 2 in Tucson, 1 in Buffalo, New York, 3 in Pennsylvania, and 1 in Washington, state of Washington.
Sounds like many cold climates.
Yes, that's why they all come here to visit.
I bet. And how about yourself, Pam?
Well, I'm just the opposite of Karen. I don't have a huge family, but I do have a 3.5-year-old. So most people would be surprised to know that about me, but it's true. And so he keeps me running all the time. So the minute I get home from work, I'm chasing a toddler.
What's his name? A little shout out.
Morgan.
Morgan. Oh, yes. Very good. My cousin's Morgan as well. Great name.
Yes.
Good. So we'll start with you, Pam. Karen is actually a veteran of the show, so we'll get your feet wet first here today. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you ended up in healthcare.
Okay, well, I'm a social worker, and I've been in healthcare for about 25 years.
Okay.
And both my parents were in healthcare. My dad was a respiratory therapist, and my mom was a transcriptionist. So they both worked in hospitals, and I was sort of used to the hospital way of life of working nights, weekends, holidays. We kind of grew up that way. So just kind of was in my blood and went to social work school right out of college. And, you know, I did clinical bedside work for 10 years before I got into more of the management side, and then sort of, you know, worked into more healthcare administration and that type of thing. So
very good. And you mentioned out of school. Where did you go to school?
I got my master's in social work at Arizona State University.
Okay. So, ASU. Yeah. Very good.
Yeah.
And then how about you, Karen?
So I always tell people I was just born to be a nurse. I have been a nurse my entire career. Currently, I hold a doctorate in nursing practice from Case Western University and have loved my career. I've always felt like I wasn't working because I've always been with patients and loving to help them. And so it's been a wonderful career, and it's opened up so many opportunities for me professionally, as well as just building relationships and friendships in the healthcare and beyond. So,
absolutely. Well, I know we're in Arizona recording today's show. I think you're become pillar status with healthcare leaders. And I know, Karen, you're actually invited to speak in Northern California, I believe, a few years ago at the American Case Management Association. So I've seen you in a couple states. So one thing we wanted to talk today about is both Honor Health and Innovation Care Partners, and then we're going to share about that working relationship. Before we get into that, Pam, can you tell us a little bit about Honor Health and its healthcare system?
Sure. Honor Health is an integrated care system. It was the result of a merger of two local healthcare organizations that really came together as a network, I think back in about 2013-14, and merged as an organization in 2015. So we are now five acute care hospital system. We also have a freestanding ER, and we have a physician network of about 200 primary care physicians and specialists.
Excellent. And how about you, Karen? Can you tell us a little bit about Innovation Care Partners?
Sure. Innovation Care Partners is a division of Honor Health. It's a separate organization, but works very closely with Honor Health. And it is completely physician-driven and run, and they have a big voice. Innovation Care Partners is a clinically integrated network, first. And secondly, two of our contracts are with Medicare, and so we manage two accountable care organizations, or ACOs, which is a kind of a buzzword out in healthcare. So we manage two separate ACOs in our operations. That's our ops. Mm-hmm.
And how did the relationship get started between Honor Health and Innovation Care Partners?
In about 2011, Honor Health's strategic executives knew healthcare was going to change direction, and they got together with the physician community and really began to discuss what things should look like so that they could be ready for the dynamics of changing reimbursement, changing climates in healthcare. And they developed Innovation Care Partners as an entity, as a company. And it was first Scottsdale Health Partners, that's right. And have to go back a few years. And then that's how we came together. And it was really a good collaboration and a very positive collaboration between the physicians and the health system. And I think that's what's brought the strength to both organizations. It's been very, very healthy relationship.
Terrific. And Pam, how many patients does Honor Health see?
Well, on the hospital side, so in 2017, we discharged about 55,000 inpatients and about 30,000 observation patients. So we have, you know, we have a lot of other services, including outpatient surgery, ED, you know, medical group visits. So that's just sort of a part of what we do. But, I mean, our main service is really hospital care.
Sure. And then about how many of those patients are ICP patients?
We think there's about 15% of our patient population is ICP, unless Karen has more updated numbers, but I think that's roughly
about right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then how are the ICP patients managed differently at Honor Health than the non-ICP patients? What's the difference there?
I would say they probably aren't managed. They all get quality care at Honor Health. I would say that first. We do have staff inside of the acute care facilities, inside of the post-acute facilities, and in our primary care practices that manage the moderate to high-risk patients that are in Innovation Care Partners with all of our contracts. So our staff is really focused on the ICP patients and getting a good grip on them as they go through the continuum of care. For many reasons, we don't want them to have a readmission, which is stressful on patients, and it exposes them to more risk of infections, things like that. And we want them to have good communication with their providers about what that plan of care is as they transition from one facility to another. So I'm not sure it's different from Honor Health, but our program is set up to make sure we embrace that patient throughout their continuum.
And I think from our end in the hospital, we really appreciate the value and knowledge that Karen's staff brings to us, because we often don't know these patients and her team has a relationship with them. So they can help deliver information or get us in touch with families or kind of understand what's going on in the psychosocial piece of the care. And so I think that's where there's a really good collaboration and handoff. And then my team on the inpatient side works to try and make sure that we use providers that Karen has vetted. She's got aligned, a pretty tightly aligned post-acute network that's really driven off of quality. And so we try to steer those patients to those providers because we know that they're going to have quality outcomes.
Great. Well, thanks for sharing about the relationship there. Pam, you mentioned there was a couple of organizations that merged to form Honor Health. I know some of the listeners out there may have been in healthcare for a while. May I ask who those organizations were that formed Honor Health?
Sure. It was Scottsdale Healthcare and the John C. Lincoln Health Network merged to form Honor Health.
Okay. Do you know what inspired that merger?
I think, you know, in general, we've seen across the healthcare landscape over the last 5 or 10 years, I mean, we've seen a lot of mergers across the country. And the John C. Lincoln Network and Scottsdale Healthcare were really two of the last smaller hospital systems in the Valley. Okay. You know, we have Banner here in Maricopa County, Dignity. So I think in looking at, as Karen said, in looking at the future of healthcare and really how to survive and how to leverage off to scale, the decision was made that, you know, if these two systems were going to survive, we better, you know, unite forces. So I think that was really the driving thought behind that. Karen, I don't know if you have any other thought.
I think you're right on with that, yeah. And it was, I think, a good strategic move mm-hmm. to merge the two health systems because they became the second largest mm-hmm. health system in the state. So mm-hmm. that's...
And I think what's unique a little bit about Honor Health is that really it's local, you know, and that's what's really... that was one of the things that attracted me to Honor Health because most of the other big systems we have in the Valley, you know, Tenet, Dignity, Banner, they're all multi-state. And Honor Health, I think, is really the only local healthcare system that we have. And so there's something attractive to me about that. And really, I think we have are a mission-driven organization. So the John C. Lincoln Network has a long, long-standing history of kind of being in that Central Valley, really providing for the citizens of its community. Scottsdale Healthcare, the same thing, very ingrained and embedded in the community. We have a food bank. We have a community paramedicine program. I mean, we just have a lot of different services that we provide to our community that I think help make us unique from the rest of the market.
And I was actually going to ask about that too, Pam. I know the population here in Phoenix continues to grow and mm-hmm. Continues to expand outward. What is sort of the geographic reach at this point of the Honor Health System?
Well, primarily, so our hospitals are in the Scottsdale Corridor. So Scottsdale, as you may or may not know, it's sort of long and narrow. So we kind of cover Scottsdale from the south to the north. And then we are also in the central Phoenix, in the sort of just at the north end of the central corridor. And then up in northern Phoenix, we have our Deer Valley Medical Center, which is really, it's at the crux of the busiest highway intersection in Maricopa County. And then just north of there, up closer to the Anthem area, we have a freestanding ER. So our hospitals sort of reach that Scottsdale Central Valley. Our physician network, though, has offices in the East Valley, West Valley, really throughout Maricopa County. The Honor Health Medical Group has a presence of providing primary care to, you know, the citizens in local communities around Maricopa County.
So one thing you touched on that I found interesting, Pam, you said food bank. We have had some folks on the show who've talked about how nutrition is playing a role in population health. And I was curious if you can tell us a little bit about the food bank, its purpose. Is it strictly for charitable purposes? Talk about that.
Sure. Well, I think, you know, one of the big social determinants of health is food and having access to healthy food. And so I think Karen and Karen's team and my team, certainly we see patients every day who have lack of access to healthy food. And, you know, in the past, we could refer a patient to a food bank or have a food box delivered to their home. And what we were finding was that, you know, most of the food was processed, prepackaged, high in sodium. So our heart failure patients were ending up getting sicker from that food. So it really wasn't helping them. So the Desert Mission, which is over on the John C. Lincoln campus, they have a food bank that is committed to providing fresh food to patients in that population. So we can certainly provide fresh food to a good number of our residents. And over here in Scottsdale, I mean, we're trying to kind of come up with avenues to reach a broader population through that. But that really is part of the mission for John C. Lincoln. And I also failed to mention when we were talking about Honor Health, I just thought of this, and shame on me for not thinking of it before, but we do have an FQHC, a federally qualified health center, which is our NOAA clinic, the Neighborhood Outreach Access to Health. And they are also mission-driven and provide primary care, mental health care, dental care to a large population of Medicaid patients, uninsured patients. I mean, they have a lot of services that they provide to the community. And they have a very strong affiliation with that Desert Mission Food Bank as well, because many of their patients need access to that.
Okay, great. Thanks, Pam. So Innovation Care Partners. In the word is innovation. This has been top of mind for me for many years. One of my roles in where I work is, you know, be innovative. And believe it or not, folks, the Pop Health Podcast is not my full-time job, just so you're aware. One of the things that I think has been innovative and been in the news over the past month was how Medicare Advantage plans can have a little bit more flexibility, things like adding non-medical home care as a covered benefit. I'm not sure if you folks heard, but over the last 30 days, day-to-day work, I'm involved in that. So I was curious, not with home care, but just with Innovation Care Partners and the relationship with Honor Health, and this could be for you too, Pam, but first with Karen, how would you say Innovation Care Partners has been innovative or is currently innovating?
I think it starts with our physician network. I think they have been kind of frustrated with healthcare over the years,
yeah.
Especially our primary care. They felt out of the loop and not connected with what was happening with patients. And so we started with applying technology that connected the physician network together. We use a HIPAA-compliant texting system that all of the physicians, we have 1,600 physicians plus in our network, and so they can do referrals, they can talk to each other, all HIPAA compliant, and really get immediate patient care issues taken care of quite quickly. And so that was one innovative thing. Our technology is very important to the physicians. They developed what they wanted in our health information exchange platform, so all of Honor Health's Epic data flows into our HIE and is part of access to all of our providers, whether they're Honor Health providers or private practice physicians. And we strategically met with post-acute providers and developed our preferred provider network based on their ability to think out of the box. And I think 24-hour home care is one example. One of the things I think they've done very innovatively is created a relationship Uber or Uber Assist. To me, transportation is one of those social determinants we find all the time out there that can be a challenge. So we look for providers to partner with that come about. We just partnered with a mobile urgent care that will bring services to the home so patients don't have to wait in an ER or don't have to go to an urgent care. They can get health care in their home. So looking at some of those ideas is what we do every day.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. Where I work with health systems in the Southwest, where some of them are still putting together those narrow networks. They haven't got there yet. So to hear that you've done it, and you've not just done it with the traditional maybe home health and SNFs, but you've gone outside of that as well. And so it's neat to see, and a great answer. Same question to you, Pam, maybe at Honor Health. What's been innovative? You mentioned the food bank already, which I don't think many health systems have that resource. Tell us some more.
Well, I mean, we're really focusing heavily on transitions of care, so as most organizations are. And, you know, I don't know that what we've done is necessarily that innovative, but we do have some unique services, you know, that we can provide. So one of the things that we developed in partnership with the City of Scottsdale a few years ago is a community paramedicine program.
Okay.
So it's a mobile integrated health care program that we provide at no charge to the patient. And so it's a nurse practitioner and a medic who can go out to the home. You know, it's a referral-based program. And so if my staff identifies someone that could really benefit from having that home care, home visit, and maybe they don't qualify under other payment models, this is a good opportunity for them. And they really have the flexibility to meet the patient where they're at. So, you know, Steve is an EMT. He's worked for the city for 30 years, and they often go out, and if the patient has a broken doorstep or a broken door or something like that, he can help get that fixed. And that may be one of the things that is an immediate need and worry for the patient. And sometimes the things that are important to patients and maybe contributing to their health or decline in their health are things that aren't related to their health at all. And so, you know, we're able to try and have a little bit of flexibility with those types of things. I'm also working very closely. Honor Health has a home health agency that is recently now under the case management umbrella. Okay. So we're doing some innovative things there with aligning our contracts, working with our home care to kind of have some flexibility, whereas in the past they were more siloed. And so, you know, now they're really part of, we're trying to bring them in and be part of case management so that we can really work collaboratively. We've got some transition of care RNs who are doing follow-up and outreach, and then we have a congestive heart failure nurse program that's designed just for those patients' unique needs, and so they coordinate care while they're in the hospital and then follow them for 30 days out of the hospital. And all of these programs sort of intersect with Karen's teams, and so we really work together collaboratively and really without trying. The biggest challenge is that we don't want to have redundancies in the post-acute environment, so we really try and figure out who's going to do what and try to coordinate all of that before the patient leaves the hospital so that the patient isn't getting a lot of phone calls and people tripping over each other in that space.
I used to initially, or early on in my healthcare career, I was told, high touch, that's the way to go. But then later on we hear too many touches, right? Mm-hmm. So I love how you said eliminate the redundancy with those efforts, because it can be very confusing.
They can, and we found, you know, when we were sort of starting out this work in the heart failure arena, you know, we had like five or six different sets of instructions that patients were getting, you know, so we want to make sure that we're giving clear messages. And the other thing is that these resources are really precious, right? And so we want to be able to maximize and touch as many patients as we can and really leverage our resources for the right patients. So I think that's the challenge. And we do use a predictive modeling tool in our EMR to try to identify patients that are really going to benefit from these services. It's not perfect, but at least it helps guide us and gives us a good start.
You mentioned your EMR, electronic medical record. Do you use, if you mind me asking, a certain software company? Have you built your own?
No, we use Epic.
Okay. One question we like to ask our guests here as we get close to the end of the show. The current administration, politics is the headline. You know, I've heard both sides of the story that, oh my gosh, everything's going to be repealed or nothing's going to change, it's business as usual. And for both of you, Karen and Pam, what approach are you taking with the new administration and potential changes? Can you share about that? Is anything changing?
Our CMO is very politically active, and so is our CEO. And so they stay very connected with the policy changes, you know, possible policy changes. But right now, for us, the train has already left the station, so we're probably reversing some of the operations, and the focus on ACOs and things like that isn't going to happen right away. There may be some adjustments for the better in the future, but many have been successful. So there are some positive savings and quality outcomes that are happening for patients. So I don't think we'll see the changes in our area right now.
So business, train is moving, like you said.
Train is moving.
Yeah. How about you, Pam? Anything new or different because of it?
Yeah, I think where Karen's side is really, she really is in a value-based model fully. We are still have one foot in volume-based and fee-for-service world, and then another foot in the value-based world. So I think we're trying to bridge that and balance that, and it's difficult. I do see progress moving towards value-based care. And so I do see the thinking of Honor Health. You know, we're definitely moving that way. It's hard to go all in when your payment model just won't follow that. So I think most healthcare organizations, you know, your margin is very, very thin. And so there's just not a lot of extra to pay for a lot of extra things that you're not getting reimbursed for. So we are trying to balance the best care for our patients with our resources. And I think we're doing a good job of that. We'll continue to refine that as time goes forward. But I think there'll be some tweaks, you know, with the ACA. We don't have a huge population of patients who are affected by the ACA at this point. But if I think the biggest concern for health systems is if the Medicaid funding were to change, because here in Arizona back in 2011, we basically stopped Medicaid for all but, you know, children and families, right? And so many working adults or non-working adults were left without insurance, and that really impacted the state of Arizona. And so the ACA helped to change that, and now many more of our low-income adults have access to health care. So I think the biggest fear is if that were to change, then we would have a lot of unfunded patients in our communities again, and that would be difficult for us to navigate. So I think that's the one concern that sort of, you know, weighs on us. But right now, I think we just stay the course and keep going the way we're headed, and, you know, we'll be okay.
So I know both of you have been involved with the American Case Management Association. Tell us a little bit about that organization and your involvement.
I'll start. So we, several years ago, Kate Holdeman and I said we were going to get this chapter started here in Arizona. And we brought up she was president, I was president-elect, the first Arizona ACMA chapter. And that's continuing to grow. Currently, I'm past president of the Arizona ACMA, and that's you're still on duty.
Yes.
In some ways. And then I also, thanks to Pam, I am on the National Advisory Council for the National ACMA. It's one of the committees, the board committees.
Nice recruiting, Pam.
Yes, Pam. Just when you think you have a break, your colleague says, oh, by the way.
Yeah.
So I think for ACMA, once you're involved, you just become part of the family.
Yeah.
And it's just so fun to be, you learn a little different aspect or you speak here. It's just a great organization to build relationships, stay on top of changes in healthcare, especially for health systems, case management, social work. I mean, it's really a good organization to keep abreast of things. So
nice. Yeah. Now, Pam, before we get to you, when we were talking off mic, so Pam is actually the current president for the next, well, I guess by the time the show comes out, you've been the president of ACMA National, and it's not just a little bit of time, right? Of a commitment? Tell us about that.
Right. It is a fair amount of time commitment, but it's been really one of the highlights of my career. So I think I got involved with ACMA back in 2008, which was before we had the Arizona State chapter. And I took my credentialing exam back then, and ACMA has its own, you know, case management credential. So I did that and then really fell in love with the organization and went to my first conference and did a poster presentation and just met so many wonderful case management professionals, and the networking and education, I just found it invaluable and was able to get involved in the board and some of the committees. And then, yeah, before I knew it, I was president-elect, and now I'm just finished my term as president. But the organization has grown tremendously since I first joined, and I'm just really proud of the visionary thought of the board and the CEO and just the organization. And we've really grown from being a hospital-centric organization to a healthcare system organization. And so we're really embracing the post-acute community, transitions of care, and realizing that hospital alone doesn't make it work. It takes a village. And so we're really, I think, becoming just really that, representing that whole continuum of care, which is really exciting. And we've developed standards of practice and simulations and the certification and just really wonderful training products to help case managers. I think just wonderful tools and resources for case managers to develop their practice. And it's interesting because people that go into case management, whether you're an RN or a social worker or even another discipline, you know your discipline, but you don't necessarily know the discipline of case management. So I think we've done a really good job of developing that practice and teaching people how to practice that discipline. And I think it is a unique discipline. And I think a lot of people that we work with don't realize that, you know, it really is a unique body of knowledge apart from nursing or social work. I mean, that's part of it, but, you know, it's definitely a unique skill set. So we really need to, you know, develop strong case managers. And to be able to do that, we need organizations like ACMA behind us.
Thanks so much for sharing about ACMA, a wonderful organization. Now, as we wrap up here, I just wanted to ask you all one more question. So, Karen, you know, we talked a lot about Innovation Care Partners and just the forward-thinking mindset that you have towards patient care and serving the population here in Maricopa County. If you had a crystal ball, where would you see ICP, say, 5 to 10 years from now?
I would say that one thing I know about ICP and its executives is that it has grown a lot. 2012, we started with 300 physicians, and currently we have over 1,600. But it has managed its growth very well. We had, in 2012, we had maybe 1,800 patients in contracts, and now we have over almost 90,000. But you can't get too big too fast because operations have to follow your growth. And I think that's one thing we've done very well. So for me, in my crystal ball, I only see success in our future development because ICP takes its time and manages its growth well and always stays on top of the changing healthcare climate nationally. So we're ready to turn on a dime, but its leadership is pretty strong, so I don't see us going anywhere.
Excellent, always good to hear. And Pam, I'd like to turn over the same question to you about Honor Health. If you had a crystal ball, where would you see Honor Health in 5 to 10 years?
Well, I mean, I think we're going to make that journey to value-based payment. And so I actually see Honor Health really kind of following in the footsteps of ICP and having many of the tools and resources and models that they're using to take care of patients as we continue down that journey. So, and I think as an organization, having the merger is still relatively fresh. I mean, it's starting to congeal, but I think as we mature as an organization, we will become more system-based and develop more system-based practice. And just, I think, refine that as we go. You know, there's still pockets of this hospital does this that way, and this hospital does this that way. So I think in 5 to 10 years, we'll have more standardization and just become, like I said, become more of a system.
Well, this has been a great episode. It's great to have Joe co-host again. Joe, it's been a while since you co-hosted.
Yes, definitely great to be here. Absolutely, out in Arizona.
And, of course, Karen, who's now in her second episode with Pop Health Podcast. For those of you out there that don't know, Karen was in one of our very first episodes of Pop Health Podcast alongside, I believe, David?
David Baker, yes.
David Baker on technology.
Yes.
So we talked about that a couple years ago. Feel free to check out that episode that's specific to Innovation Care Partners. You can find that on pophealthpodcast.com or iTunes.
Thanks for inviting me back.
Of course, Karen and Pam Foster. It's been a privilege. We've known your name with ACMA, and I know a colleague, Joey, has done a lot of work with your hospital. So truly a privilege to finally meet you.
Well, thank you, and same here, and thank you for inviting me. It's been a pleasure.
Very good. And folks, remember, if you like the show today, don't forget to like us at iTunes or Stitcher, and feel free to check out more about the show at pophealthpodcast.com, and don't forget to leave a review. Thanks, folks. Take care.